AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. And by propane. Propane is the energy for everyone, especially farmers. Environmentally friendly propane can fuel most anything on the farm. See how at propane.com. Corn and bean prices are under pressure while spring wheat futures are trying to lead prices back to the upside. We've got a smaller hog herd, smaller corn plantings, and a lack of love for E15 to talk about today, along with bigger bean plantings, a bigger workforce, and a bigger effort to move some acres around yet this spring.
Live from April Smarties Day via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning it's our Friday for Reefer Ho! Panelists Jim Wiesmeyer, Sean Haney, and Mark Recker. Right after the news, Jennifer Scheich from Farm Journal's Pork. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
How you doing, buddy? Everything good on this April Fool's Day?
Super fantastic. Look out your window. Do you see that sunshine?
Are you vibing on this sunshine? And woo! My eyes are not lying to me. This is not a trick.
It feels so good. Feels so good.
Yeah. Well, enjoy it today.
What?
Enjoy it today. I don't think it'll be there in the morning. Well, it'll be there. We just won't be able to see it quite as well as we do right now.
Oh, all right.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah, well,
I guess the bear spreads continue in the temperatures. I make it 34 here. Feels like 29. I can live with that, though. That's light jacket weather.
Wait a minute. It's April 1st.
Yeah?
It's 31. No, that's chilly for this time of the year. Last year, Northern Illinois, guys were planting corn by April 5th.
You know what?
I don't know if you're that's going to happen or not this year.
I think you're exactly right. This is a terrible day, Chip.
It's not a terrible day.
It couldn't be worse, Chip. A piano could fall on my head, and I'd be like, well, that figures.
Yeah, go figure. Yep. All right, we have got a free-for-all going today. We've got a lot of topics that we want to cover. I want to pull from some of the conversations that we had earlier this week about a CO2 pipeline. Yeah, that one generated some reactions.
It's an interesting idea.
Thank you, everybody, for feedback.
We love that. We love it.
We love the feedback. Some of you need to take a course in civility, okay?
Ooh.
I'm just saying.
A light scolding from our beloved host.
And others.
You're so gentle.
And others. Cannot wait for this project to get up and running and start moving the carbon from the ethanol facilities into the ground. And I don't know if I've gotten this kind of reaction that is so divided to a topic that we've talked about on the show before. It's pretty amazing. Pretty amazing. All right. Wow. Okay. Let's get going here. What you got in the news?
Yeah. Well, Chip, non-farm payrolls increased by 431,000 in March, below expectations for an increase closer to 500,000. The employment rate declined to 3.6% as the number of jobless Americans declined. Several other readings in the Labor Department's update are also near pre-pandemic levels, Chip.
Yeah, I think this was generally a good report. Average hourly earnings month over month up 0.4%. That's what was expected. The year-over-year increase, 5.6% versus a 5.5% expected. So I think it was generally a good report.
Well, Chip, the average rate for a 30-year fixed mortgage rose to 4.67%. That's the highest level since 2018, according to Freddie Mac. While rates had been expected to rise, they have accelerated more than anticipated, although analysts do not expect the higher rate to deter homebuyers just yet, Chip.
Yeah, yeah. It is a matter of fact, we should see a surge in home buying activity on the idea that we better get it bought now before interest rates go even higher later.
Well, China's factory activity declined at the fastest pace in more than 2 years in March due to COVID restrictions and economic fallout from the war in Ukraine. The CXN Market Manufacturing Purchasing Managers Index, which measures activity by smaller, privately owned factories, fell below growth neutral to 48.1 in March. Mm-hmm. And Chip, President Biden on Thursday ordered the release of 180 million barrels of crude from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve over the next 6 months in an attempt to offset supply disruptions triggered by Russia's invasion. It is the biggest ever drawdown in the country's emergency stockpile. The draw will leave the U.S. stockpile below International Energy Agency member minimum reserve supplies. Meanwhile, the president intends to impose financial penalties on drillers for unused federal permits, leaving oil executives less than inclined to than ever to invest the proceeds from $100 per barrel crude into new wells. Chip, what a mess.
I am.
What are we doing?
I'm just not exactly sure what we're doing here. There are, we've got options, and we're not using all the options. We'll talk about that later in the show.
Well, satellite images confirm Russia has attacked Ukrainian grain storage facilities at least six different locations. Meanwhile, Ukraine has launched its first offensive sortie since the invasion, striking a fuel depot in the Russian city of Belgorod. Russian state-owned energy giant Gazprom said it was continuing to supply Europe with natural gas, according to a Reuters report. This, as European countries face a deadline to begin paying for gas in rubles today or have existing contracts with Russia terminated. Now we're bringing in some currency fluctuations here, Chip, with the ruble.
Oh, with the rubble. Yeah, it's there's going to be more of this. There's no question about it.
Well, and quickly, USDA Thursday announced the launch of the Emergency Livestock Relief Program, which will address increases in supplemental feed costs in 2021. We'll get more from Jim on that. And the Senate nearing a deal on a $10 billion COVID aid package that would fall well short of the White House's original request, but keep the stalled legislation moving. Chip.
Man, oh, man. We'll talk about that, too. Dump more money into it, I guess. Thanks, Davis. Appreciate it. Let's bring in Jennifer Scheich, editor of Farm Journal's Pork. Good morning, Jennifer. How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Doing just fine. The hog industry, I think, in general, got some good news earlier this week. Supreme Court's going to hear the Prop 12 case, right?
They're going to listen to the American Farm Bureau Federation's and MPPC's challenge to it. And so, yes, I mean, I think it's good news at the start. I mean, I think the jury's mixed on there exactly what that's gonna, how that will end, but it sounds like they're gonna hear the case maybe after they begin the new term in October. So we're optimistic, and it gives us a good chance to ramp up our efforts to, you know, be able to make our case and show the concerns.
Right. And this is gonna be so important, not only for the hog industry, but for all of animal agriculture, because it's going to be the Supreme Court basically saying if voters in one state can tell hog producers in another state how they should produce their, you know, raise their hogs. So it's going to be a precedent setting case, isn't it?
Absolutely. And I think that's the bigger thing at play here is obviously, you know, the industry can adjust and make changes, but if every state keeps making up a different plan and everybody has to keep changing and, you know, it's not based on science. There's so many problems with it. But, yes, we want to, you know, change this precedent so we don't create a massive problem from here forward.
Exactly. That's going to be a fun one to follow, Jennifer. Thank you so much. Appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you.
You bet. That is Jennifer Scheich, editor of Farm Journal's Pork. Go to porkbusiness.com to learn more about that. We got the free-for-all coming your way. We've got Wiesmeyer, Haney, and Record next.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Clarifly Larvicide, your feed-through fly control solution.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
Your next piece of equipment is on MachineryPete.com. Search equipment from dealerships across the country to find what you're looking for. Only on MachineryPete.com.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Glad that you are with us. We've got Pro Farmer Policy Analyst Jim Wiesmeyer with us to kick off the free-for-all. How you doing, Jim?
Pretty good, Chip.
Good, good, good. So Davis just gave us the news, and in the news he was talking about the announcement that we got from USDA on Thursday about the Emergency Livestock Relief Program. What are some of the details on that?
Well, you don't even have to go in to sign up. It'll total around $577 million. There'll be two phases, Chip. Interestingly so, they have different percentages of payments based upon you get a higher percentage if you're an underserved, you know, producer, and 75% for others. And they defined that, you know, they have a definition of underserved. But again, it's good news because finally this money is coming out, and it's much needed in certain parts of the country.
Okay. Now, this money is for feed costs? Is that what it is?
Feed cost, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
In 2020 and 2021. You know, that's how they announced the program. They're not calling it WIP Plus. They're calling it the ERLP, Emergency Livestock Relief Program.
Right. Right. Okay. All right. Let's get the rest of the crew in here. Sean Haney, Real Agriculture, Real Ag Radio. Good morning, Sean.
Good morning. It's Final Four weekend, Chip. I am just so excited.
You know, Davis hopped off. He's got to take care of a couple of things this morning, but he would be thrilled to hear you talking about the Final Four, because for the first time he picked them all. He's got.
Have
got
we confirmed that? We've confirmed that.
Well, he's claiming it because of his decision to go with the team with the blue shirt.
Very scientific. Very, right. Very scientific.
Yeah.
I've got two of the four, so Davis has got me beat.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. All right, stay tuned there, Haney. And Mark Recker from Iowa. How you doing today, Mark?
I'm doing really well, Chip. It's a nice sunshiny day here in Northeast Iowa, and gets us in the mood to want to be outside if it weren't for the snow on the ground and the, still freezing temperatures.
That's right. That's right. It looks great from the inside. You get out there and it's still a little chilly. Recker, what in the world is going on? We've got President Biden announcing the release of 1 million barrels a day for the next 6 months. And E15 is getting no love, man. This is it. It is driving the whole industry crazy that E15 isn't getting a nod.
It's driving me crazy too. And it has been for all that we've been talking about it. We can point out all the benefits, and many of your guests on your show over the past several months have, Chip, and the carbon friendly aspect and all that. But in a world that we live in right now, where we are energy deficit in this country, and this administration has done some of the right things with funding of infrastructure for biofuels and things like that. Yep. But to me, this is such low hanging fruit for them right now to approve E15 year round for summertime use, that especially in a political year, in a year of elections, when they are going to need every vote they can get, especially in the Midwest, and they're going to have some close races. This is something, for many reasons, just makes all sense that it could, that they get E15 and get it out there and make it available.
Okay, guys, I'm going to throw something out there, and I figured that the E15 announcement was coming, and it hit me, I would say, a month ago when when I was looking at the weekly ethanol production data. Now, the margin is still there, even with corn prices where they're at. Ethanol plants are still making money. Now, it's not great money on the ethanol, but when you look at the DDGs and some of the other products that are coming out of that plant, they are still making money. It's not great money, but they're still making money, so they're going to continue to produce. But as we were increasing production, our stocks were going boom, 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 climbing to the upside. And I'm thinking, man, we've got to do something to move. Wait. No, we're preparing for E15 availability across the country through the summer, and they're going to use it to try to bring pump prices down. Well, it made all the sense in the world, and now they're not doing it. Haney, why no love for E15? What's going on?
I wonder, is there like an anti-big corporate sentiment here where, like, if you really showcase support for things like ethanol, it's like big ag, big oil. It's just, is that the stain that's on it? Like, what is the hesitation? Because it fits. I believe it was yesterday. I heard you know, say like, it's just so crystal clear how this fits into their goals on greenhouse gas emission reduction.
Yeah.
And there's just but they're willing to latch on to like big green energy, like, you know, the Ford and Tesla and like Elon, like, but for whatever reason, there just is this hesitation that I don't understand.
But the thing is, the administration, when they opened up the office of the Biden administration, that one of the first things that they said, and it was even before the elections, they were saying, we're going to get this country off of fossil fuels. And instead they're dumping 1 million barrels out of the Strategic Petroleum Reserve into the marketplace now. Jim, does any of this make sense to you?
Well, yeah, it's a question of timing on the E15. I think they will announce it. I think they're probably looking at the right spot, location, et cetera, since everything's all politics now heading into the November 8th elections. And Biden really had to do what he had to do relative to the SPR. Although it's 1% of total world demand, it is the largest ever, as we've indicated. So I'll tell you, this week alone, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi held two separate meetings with her caucus on what to do about these gas prices. The White House has called every cabinet member for options on what they can do relative to their departments. And you know E15 is on the list, Chip. I just think it's a matter of time.
Well, okay. Now, this brings up another theory for me. And it's a thought that I had yesterday when we were having a conversation, you know, the conversation about the permanently locking up CO2. But I made the comment, and I made it on the Farmer Forum on Wednesday, that's what it was, that E15 isn't good enough for the progressives. And what I mean by that is, if Pelosi is meeting with her caucus in an effort to try to figure out what to do about gas prices, if the progressives hear E15, what they're hearing is prolonging the life of fossil fuel use. And they are hearing an argument against EVs, electric vehicles. And it may be the progressives in her caucus, Jim, that are saying, no, let's not give ethanol any breaks here, because we need to get rid of liquid fuel altogether.
Well, there's a contingency on that, but just as Biden has had to temper some of his anti-fuel oil aspects, it's called realistic politics. So I think that they'll grasp at anything to temper the gasoline prices at the pump.
Chip, if I can.
Yeah.
The administration has to decide what's important and what's urgent. And climate change and that, which is a big part of their policy, is important. But right now, urgent is gas prices and an all-the-above energy strategy, and that's got to include E15. And I'm like, Jim, I think they'll see it. I think you'll see it coming. But boy, it's taken a long time to get there. And it's interesting when you watch news broadcasts and they show the prices at the pump, and they actually show you the pump. If they have ethanol in there, that's always 30 cents cheaper. Now, they don't comment on that, but it's so obvious.
I know the Renewable Fuels Association daily briefing that they sent out this morning. I read some of the comments very quickly. You can just feel the frustration coming from Jeff Cooper, the CEO and president at RFA. Emily Score from Growth Energy. I caught some of the comments that she made on Fox Business yesterday afternoon. The frustration was so clear, so evident there. I think the entire industry feels like we're talking about the answer and nobody is listening.
Oh yeah, it's being detached from reality.
Yeah.
You can't move to 100% EV next month. And so it's a question of what kind of pain are you willing to create for people in the meantime? And the New York Times has a great story on the price of diesel. The average price of diesel right now is $5.19 a gallon in the US. That sounds horrible. In Germany, it's actually $9.10 a gallon. So this could potentially get a lot worse than better in the near term.
And if you want to see food prices go up, just keep the cost of delivering food around the country going higher with the higher prices too. Wow. We got the free-for-all going. We'll be back with AgriTalk here in a moment.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Joining us now, Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Beej, that bean market is starting to act like an anchor on the rest of the grains. What's happening?
Well, USDA kind of flipped the script yesterday. Soybean planting intentions at nearly 91 million acres above the corn planting intentions and well above what the market expected. So that's led to long liquidation. Funds are liquidating positions there, and the money flow is now out of the market. But interestingly, it's the old crop contracts that are leading us down, not the new crop contracts. But yeah. Still, I think that watch that money flow. That's important. Meal market is following soybeans lower this morning and trading solidly to the downside. Soy oil, however, has rebounded and trading solidly higher. So quite a bit of spreading activity going on in the soy complex.
Yeah, and it's not soybean oil isn't getting much of a pull from crude oil. Crude oil is just slightly higher today. So have to watch that market for some potential demand out there coming our way. Spring wheat trying to lead things to the upside too.
Yeah, so the spring wheat planting intentions were below expectations. That gave the market support yesterday. It didn't finish real well, ended mid-range, but we are seeing follow-through. Still trading well below yesterday's highs, so that's gotcha. Something to watch moving forward.
Gotcha. All right, good stuff. Take us over to the livestock trade. What's happening?
Yeah, pretty quiet, really, in the cattle market. Front end of the feeders are being supported by the weaknesses in old crop corn futures. Live cattle just really choppy, nothing really going on there. And then hogs rebounding yesterday's key bearish reversals in those summer month contracts. So that's important to negate that bearish technical signal that was flashed after the bullish H&P report.
Boy, if they could get that done today and close with these gains, that'd be great. Thank you, Brian. This is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. When news breaks, the newsmakers talk about it on AgriTalk with Chip Flory.
Welcome back to AgriTalk and the Free-for-All. We've got Jim Wiesmeyer, Sean Haney, and Mark Recker on the show today. Guys, let's talk about a couple of reports that we got this week from USDA that kind of shook up the markets for a little while. Let's start with the hogs and pigs report. Much greater contraction in the hog industry than what the market anticipated. Now, we had a sharp run up in the market leading up to the report, not just this week, but last week. Last week, the hog futures gained like 8% in 1 week. It was a huge week. Held on to a lot of those gains until we got the report out on Wednesday afternoon. And then yesterday in the market, a whole lot of profit taking got in there. Jim, the contraction in this industry is persistent at this point, isn't it?
Yes, and it's going to continue, Chip. I give more than a few speeches to the pork sector, and they've been telling me this for the major, and I mean major, to some of the best operating of hog producers on the purse, and it's continuing. Yeah. And they're telling me now that USDA is probably too high on pigs per litter because of the restructuring that's going on in the hog sector as a result of this major development, Chip. So
Right. We've
got lower inventories ahead.
Yeah. Mark, what are your hog producing friends saying about PERS? Because I'm picking up some stuff this week that is unsettling, to say the least.
Yeah, you've been hearing about it for a while. The ones that I talked to have, it's a trend that's hard to reverse, Chip. It really is. It seems like you just can't eliminate it. It keeps showing up. So unfortunately, it's a fight that they keep fighting. And it's really concerning when you see inventories going down like this, no doubt.
Yeah.
Kind of feels like the cow herd a little bit, Chip.
A little bit there. Yeah. And it kind of feels like meat price inflation all over the place is what it feels like. You know, the PERS thing, and Jim mentioned it briefly, and I think it's interesting because one of the reports that I got this week was instead of fighting it in the sow herd, just the plan now is to depopulate a sow herd and start over for this one operation. That means all new genetics. That means all new. It's like Jim said, it's a systemic change in the industry, and man, it raises a lot of concern about our pork supply going forward. It for me, another producer, large producer, that has owned pigs for a long time, just can't take the losses in pig numbers because of PERS and in the pocketbook any longer, and going forward is going to be using his well-established operation as custom feeders. It really is shocking, to say the least. Another report that we got just yesterday, corn acres intended to be planted on 89.49 million acres. On soybean planting intentions, 90.955. You don't have to go back that far to find a planting intentions report with beans above corn. You just have to go to 2018, but that was like 100,000 or something like that. It wasn't that much of a difference when things ended up. Mark, these fertilizer prices bit a lot harder than what many analysts figured.
I think it did. I think, you know, in our world here, we saw a lot of fertilizer go on last fall, a lot of anhydrous, and we comforted by the fact that, well, that'll maintain corn acres because a lot of producers got that bought ahead of time. But I just think perhaps still the producers that didn't get fertilizer on and the continued sticker shock, especially with the war now and that increased everything a couple hundred bucks a ton, maybe some guys are throwing up their hands and it's like, we're just going to go to beans this year and maybe eliminate some other problems, even though there's still profitability in corn.
Right.
And when you compare the two, is my understanding that corn is actually a higher estimated margin per acre than
soybeans. So, yes.
So like that doesn't make sense to me. So then it's like this, you're paying attention to the sticker shock.
Yeah.
and the cash outlay.
Okay.
Not necessarily looking at the actual margin,
right?
And profitability.
Well, right. There's also the fear they may not get the fertilizer supplies delivered.
There's that.
Okay, that's fair.
Now, one of the messages that I got after the report yesterday from a longtime listener over in Western Iowa, he said, listen, after the report came out at noon, he was making plans to increase his corn acres.
By 2 o'clock,
okay, by 2 o'clock, he decided, you know what? I'm not going to spend that money on fertilizer. I know that the profitability on beans isn't as great as it is on corn, but it's not too dang bad. It's good enough. I'm just going to stick with the beans.
That's interesting.
You know, I think another factor is, too, that if we have so many corn on corn acres, that this may be the year, if you're experienced heavy rootworm issues, and I think there's a lot of acres, growing acres, that have that issue now, and it's increasing tremendously. This may be the thing to just tip your hand and say, we're just going to lay off corn this year and grow some really good beans on some continuous corn ground.
That's a great point, Mark, a great point. And we talk about being able to skimp a little bit on fertilizer at least every now and then. Well, that's not following the kind of crop that we had a year ago. We took a lot out of the ground to make a really big corn crop in key areas. So when they're getting the soil test results back, if they were thinking, well, you know what, I can go a little easier on the P and K this year, the soil test is saying, no, you better not. So the idea of spreading the fertilizer dollars out a little thinner over more acres versus sticking to the program on fewer acres, I think the idea is, if I'm going to grow a corn crop and get the profitability that it suggests from this market, I've got to stick with my standard package on fertilizer, and the costs are going up on them.
I'm taking the over.
Mark asked some great questions this morning leading up to it. leading up to the free-for-all, he was asking about, now wait a second, a year ago, didn't we see something very similar on this? So last year's prospective planning report on corn showed us 91.114, and we ended up planting, this is from the WASDE, 93.4 million acres. So we went from 91.1 up to 93.4. Bean acres in the intentions report, 87.6, went down to 87.2. Mark, I think corn's going to try to claw some acres back, don't you?
I think so too. I would bet on that number coming in over 89 million acres for sure, north of 90. But you know, it really were dictated by the weather here. And I used to think that if the weather was good, ground is working great, you're planting corn, guys will keep planting corn. But, you know, we plant so many beans first now that the bean planter gets filled up and gets going. I'm not sure that that's maybe going to play out the same way. But I still think that corn number is probably going to be the low number you see for the year yesterday.
Yeah. Well, yesterday on the close, the bean to corn price ratio was 2.08 to 1. I mean, usually to move some acres over to beans, it takes like a 2.5. Now, the fertilizer situation is going to be changing that. I get that. But 2.08, and we've got that kind of a bean number that we're working with, it's crazy. But, Jim, there may be some relief on the horizon for these high fertilizer prices.
I'm not predicting it, but I'll tell you that the options are running wild this morning. Will USDA tap the Commodity Credit Corporation for fertilizer price aid? A number of farm state lawmakers asking for that. I don't know how many farm groups are asking. I think a number of rice growers I know are asking for that. But as I said before, the White House has talked to every cabinet member for options of their stakeholders. I've already received more than a few emails, Chip, on both sides of this issue of saying, does this reward people who didn't contract early for fertilizer, et cetera, et cetera?
Yes.
Yeah.
How can you justify, like, it'd be one thing if fertilizer prices, maybe this is a 23 discussion, but on the 22 crop, you can make money. How, right. how can you justify using the CCC to do this?
And others I just think ask me if they do this for fertilizer aid, will they also do it for increases of rents, chemicals, insurance, cost of living, et cetera?
It sounds ridiculous.
Gosh, why would they be doing this? Why would they be? Oh, yeah, there's that election coming up this fall, and the party in control is really, really concerned that there's going to be a major shift in the numbers in the House, in the Senate, and the way things look, Jim, they're going to be right.
And I think Sean hit on it. This may be a 2023 issue more than what we may realize. This food price scenario, I'll tell you, in my history in this town, that'll galvanize the White House faster than anyone realizes, and not just in the U.S., but around the world.
All right, so we are looking at a reduction in corn acres in 11 of the 12 biggest corn-producing states. South Dakota is the only one that's not going to go that direction, according to the Prospective Plantings Report. More bean acres than corn in Illinois, Indiana, Michigan, Minnesota. Can you believe that? More of the free-for-all next.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
The 2022 Bracket Busters Challenge presented by Case IH is underway. Who's still in the game? To find out, head to agweb.com/bracket-busters now through April 4th to check the leaderboard.
Welcome back to the free-for-all here on AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. We've got Pro Farmers Jim Wiesmeyer, Real Agriculture's Sean Haney, and Iowa Farmer Mark Recker on the free-for-all today. I'm going to stay on the acreage things. Just a reminder, and these are rounding, big-time rounding here, but essentially what the Prospective Plantings Report showed us yesterday is that we're moving 4 million acres from corn plant from year-ago corn plantings over to soybeans. And even though the profitability on corn is still better than what it is on soybeans for many growers, Jim, should we be asking more questions about why this decision has been made?
Absolutely. And that's why I think, NASH should actually do a follow-up survey, because we shouldn't have to wait until the June acreage report, Chip. And there's been years where they've had some follow-up surveys. If I was Phil Sack or anyone at a high level in the White House, I would tell them to do a follow-on qualitative survey to ask farmers, I think they have the data to know who to go to if the fertilizer availability or price affected their decision.
Yeah. The other thing, Mark, that we've been talking about on this show, and we've talked about it offline a little bit, is that growers have been hearing, we need more bean acres to support renewable diesel. I mean, they may have taken that message very seriously, but just took it very seriously a year or maybe even 2 years too soon.
Yeah, I know there's a lot of excitement for the ramping up of renewable diesel, and we're all pumped to produce the beans for that. But I still think at the end of the day, it's going to come down to the profitability of the crops. I think that corn being more profitable for most people will still, I think that'll win the day and even these numbers out, Chip. I think when it all washes out.
Okay.
Chip,
go ahead, Haney.
You know, Jim's question there about fertilizer disruption. We did some research in Canada. Last week we surveyed 450 farmers across the country, and 45% said they had fertilizer on farm already, which is encouraging. But 42% of Canadian farmers said that their retailer had notified them of disruption. So to Jim's question, you know, this fertilizer situation may be what's you know, if that number carries over south of the border, which, you know, we can sometimes extrapolate some of that stuff, it does speak to why that number is lower. And if you're growing soybeans this year because of renewable diesel, you're getting out ahead of yourself a little bit.
Plants
got to be built first.
But
you know, what about the livestock sector? Lower corn number. We're you know, in the first thing we're talking about E15 year round. The livestock sector has got some real hurt here when it comes to feed costs.
Well, I think that's part of the consideration that is going into the overall decision making on it, is what will be the impact on livestock producers. And I want to get to a couple of points on that here in a moment. But first, Mailman Al. This is not Mailman Mike. This is Mailman Al. He talked to me earlier about how he had gone from E10 to E20. On his route, and he's now gone to E30. He sent me an email just a little bit ago, or during the break. He's now gone to E30, and it's 47 cents a gallon less expensive. 47 cents, you guys. That's, I mean, we're talking about real money in an inflationary environment. If you can buy something that works that much less expensive, I got to believe that those pump prices are getting everybody's attention. Well, you know what? There is some evidence that it is getting everybody's attention, because I just remembered this. There are reports coming out of California that E85 use is at all-time highs and going up on a daily basis. So it's a pump price argument that we're dealing with here. Okay, on the livestock thing here, the U.S. Department of Justice has dropped charges against 5 of the 10 defendants in the chicken price fixing charges. That was after jurors were deadlocked on the case again for a second time. That was on Tuesday. That was the second mistrial. Jim, I'm not sure that they can put a jury together that understands pricing well enough to make a decision.
It's difficult at the least. And I don't think the evidence was there for some of the players to begin with. So I think that's why they folded on five or six of them.
This is going to have an impact on the DOJ's investigation into the cattle industry too, isn't it?
It should.
Because if you can't put it together to understand this, how are you going to do it on cattle pricing?
Absolutely. And we had another key decision this week, Chip, that the Supreme Court is going to review that Proposition 12 on the hog sector out of California. And that's a major, major decision, because if they don't overrule it, then these activists have a game plan for the future. So I hope the Supreme Court knocks them out.
That's right. Okay. Yesterday on the morning show, we had a conversation with Yevgeny. I'm just going to call him an industry rep, ag industry rep, straight from Ukraine. And when you hear the message straight from Ukraine, from a Ukrainian, you guys, it had an impact. It really did. The Ukrainians are strong people. And after that conversation with Yevgeny, Mark, I feel like they're going to beat Russia back.
It really sounds like it. It sounds like, you know, they're all in, and they have been. And that was a great message to get from him, Chip. It was a great interview and very, very, very inspiring.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. Haney, is that the headlines to watch the week ahead?
I don't know how you ignore it. Absolutely. Yeah. Obviously, the peace talks have not gone very well, and Putin continues to show his true colors as Ukrainians continue to fight back.
Yep, yep. Have fun with those final four games, buddy. Well, heck, have fun with the championship game.
Absolutely. It's going to be a good one. Classic games.
Yep, that's right. Thanks, Mark. Appreciate you.
You bet. Thanks, Chip. Have a good one.
All right, Jim. We'll talk to you right away Monday morning on Signal to Noise. All right?
Go Kansas.
Go Kansas. All right. Hey, come back this afternoon. Kent Beadle.